We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
From the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome, welcome. It is really good to have you here. A very interesting weekend for the Golden State Warriors. We saw two sides of that coin. They were terrible on Saturday, much better on Sunday, with an interesting wrinkle of Kevin Durant only taking six shots, really the fewest amount of shots in his entire career, but I can sign off on it. I like why he did it, and we'll talk about the reasons behind it. I wish I had a Cinderella-laden NCAA tournament to tell you about. I love doing a Monday after an NCAA tournament where I get to come in here and be like, wow, that's the greatest sporting event in the world, and I told you it would be, and you should love college basketball more. I really can't do that today. It wasn't the greatest opening round, but the people were certainly tuned in for it. Maybe the star power that the NCAA tournament's enjoying through Zion is going to be something that the NBA misses out on, because also this weekend we found out that LeBron James would not be going dancing in the NBA's postseason. We got a Gronk retiring. We got a Zaza getting a ring. And there's an awful lot to talk about this Monday. Matt Kolsky is here again this week. Matt, good to see you. How's your weekend? I heard you did a little something this weekend.
Big weekend. Big weekend for me. I'm a husband.
Mazel!
Congratulations! Yeah!
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations. Nice. That's great. That's great. By the way, we knew this about this last week. We're sworn to secrecy.
My philosophy on life events is don't jinx it.
There you go. You know? Very nice. And
we got through it. Everything went well. Little San Francisco courthouse thing on Friday. Little family get-together on Saturday. Good times.
Nice.
Good.
Fantastic, yes. Man. Good, good, good. Congratulations to you and yours. And how lucky for you she decided to settle.
Yes.
I am falling.
True indeed.
Yeah, the same formula is working in my direction, too. Thank God she got lazy and just said, I'm done. I'm done with dating scenes. I'll take this guy. Lucky. It is great to be here. Gianna, good to see you again.
Hi.
Thank you so much. I gotta thank you publicly for the barrage of cakes that you laid on the desk today. I don't want to get into this. Please do not wish the host a birthday, but it is the host's birthday.
It is. Happy birthday, Damon.
And thank you so very much. You brought me a delicious cheesecake. Danny Freisinger shows up with two chocolate cakes, and I'm like, I need boxes to bring this home. You do realize I all had a stroke a couple years ago. Do you want me to get to 45
hey,
or not?
There was fruit on top of my cheesecake.
That's right.
There's some healthy. There was
healthy
a healthy element there.
Healthy
yes.
Cheesecake.
There
so.
Was. And to really just put a bow on top of this day, Albie is stuck in Vegas.
Legitimately stuck in Vegas, though.
Yeah.
Legit.
No, it's a real airline mechanical issue, which I know that I've had to come. I've look at it this way. I've used that as an excuse coming back from Vegas once or twice. I don't think it actually was ever really happening. But no, today it really happened. So we'll see Albie a little bit later on, and hopefully he didn't lose his shirt. Hopefully you didn't either. Enjoying the NCAA tournament this weekend. And look, if you took the chalk, you were walking tall the whole weekend. It just the least amount of upsets. And I think I heard for the second time in tournament history, the 1, 2, and 3 seeds, all of them, all four of them, walked to the second weekend.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before the show, and Nash, who's filling in for Albie, was like, oh, well, you had the Oregon advancing. And it's like, yeah, but even the 12-13 was a terrible game of basketball. So even some of the upsets have been less exciting than, I mean, there are years when you think back, and the first weekend has 7 or 8 ridiculous buzzer-beating, defining moments.
Exactly. Real quick, what is the signature moment of this tournament so far? Like, I'll be happy to wait for your answer, and you probably need a little time as you come up with it.
It's probably the Duke win,
it
right?
It is, and it's the Duke win that delivers everybody to the bracket. It would have been the ultimate bracket buster.
Yeah.
Had UCF won that game, it really would have reverberated, and I'd be giving it a little bit better than a B minus or a C plus. I would have given it maybe a full 2 bump in a letter grade. Like that B minus could have gone to a B or B plus, mm-hmm. maybe. The yeah. C plus could have been a B minus. But it's not. Here's the deal. If you got 30 people in a room and you're like, what's been the best moment of this tournament? You get 17 different answers. That means there really isn't a great moment of this tournament so far.
It's the quarterback theory.
Clearly, yes.
If you have four or five, you don't have one.
Don't really have one. Zion and the Big Campus star power, without a doubt, has made this tournament a ratings winner. Look, people say we love sports drama. And we do. But more than sports drama, people like star power, people like big brands. People love big brands and star power. You put them together, Zion on Duke, well, now you have a ratings phenomenon. And this brings me to, you know, while the NCAA is enjoying a real star pulling a lot of casual fans to the table, and then all these big college brands pulling a lot of people to the tournament, you know, look, it's great to see a team like Abilene Christian get in there, but how many times do you go in the like, man, this is an Abilene Christian bar every Saturday. It gets nuts in here.
Go over to Daniel Manning's house.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen very often. Look, Google him, kids. That's a sports reference. You're going to love it. But the truth is, we love stars and star power. No LeBron this NBA offseason. We'll have him this offseason, but we're not going to have him this postseason. It's the first time since 2005 that the NBA has not had their biggest brand to sell at the most important time of the year. And it's not just like a 13-year playoff run. Like in the last 8 of them, LeBron is playing all the way to the final NBA game of the season. Whether he walked off the court a winner or a loser, like you could not have asked a guy's wick to burn longer through an entire postseason than LeBron's has. And as the NBA is enjoying a rise in stature and celebrity, I'm wondering if this postseason, it doesn't take a step back a little bit without the big ticket item being there for people to root for, or more importantly, root against.
That's what I was going to say, and that applies to Duke as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're rooting for Duke or against Duke. Clearly, Duke being there is a boon for the ratings.
Right.
And I think that has been true of LeBron, and I would be a little surprised if there's not some hit this year. But I will say this. I do think LeBron will be back in the playoffs next year. He may never win a title again. I do think he'll be back in the playoffs. And I think this may pay off in the long run. Because here's the thing. Giannis, Kawhi, Embiid, Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, obviously the Warriors stars, Jokic, Jamal Murray on Denver, Harden, Paul. There are plenty of stars, and among them are the next set.
I would hope you're right. And look, I am bought in and I'm sold, and I didn't need LeBron, and I'll sing the praises of every single name and suggest, like, it'll be fun to watch these new guys establish themselves and get a little old out of the way. Time and time again, sports ratings have proven that the majority of sports fans don't feel that way, and they do want their big ticket item, especially during the biggest chance of the year for everyone to lean forward with a massive rating. I know that, you know, LeBron has already been scheduled to be the very first game that the Warriors play. It's going to be a preseason game, albeit at Chase Center, but they're going to bring in the Lakers. And look, they're bringing in the Laker brand. They're bringing in the LeBron brand. Let's be totally honest. Both of those brands took a major hit in the basketball hierarchy this year, and they sort of did it to themselves. This leads me to another question that we're going to explore today. How much do you think Kobe Bryant is semi-enjoying LeBron's season one playoff failure? Now, Kobe's Lakers down to the socks. He doesn't want the Lakers to fail, but I think he's very, very, very protective of his own legacy and stature in L.A., and he's chalking this up as a win for the home team, without a doubt.
Here's the thing about the Lakers. It's been a minute since they were in the playoffs,
yep.
And that includes the end of Kobe Bryant's career.
Nobody remembers that detail, though.
I know. So, and by the way, that was in large part because of the way Kobe's career ended, with him being paid a ridiculous amount of money when he wasn't still Kobe. I don't think there's any doubt that he is at some level enjoying this. Yeah, maybe he wants Lakers success broadly and in the long run, but I'm pretty sure he's just fine with LeBron not instantly turning the Lakers into a legitimate competitor.
Right. He wants a little distance between him and the next good feeling. And if LeBron is standing there kind of holding the bag after 1 year and not getting it done, I just think Kobe looks at that and goes, that's tasty.
Exactly.
I think I like this. We got an awful lot for you today. You are certainly invited to be a part of it. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to have Dieter Kurtenbaugh come on by later this hour. Our pal Gary St. Jean stomps on by today. A 5 before 5. Ethan Sherwood Strauss talking about a very interesting weekend, obviously over at Oracle Arena. Steve Kerr put together a 90-second soundbite that is among the most thoughtful and interesting look-backs at this entire year run, or this entire five-year run, that I've heard him talk about in a long time, and we're going to come on back with that. Must-hear sound from Steve Kerr after a weekend where you saw the best of the Golden State Warriors after seeing one of the worst looks that the Golden State Warriors have ever shown you. And, of course, Kerr puts it all into perspective. That is what we're coming back with. You're invited to come along for the ride. 888-957-9570. Right now, Gianfranco, hello.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So let me take you behind the curtain real quick and give you all a little tip from the radio gods and how it's supposed to work. It's called a sound bite. I had a program director once told me it's a sound bite, not a sound mouthful. In other words, keep it tight.
It's a little snippet.
Keep it tight. Who would play a minute 28 second long soundbite? That's bad radio, they say. And normally they are right. You don't want to be playing a soundbite that is a minute and 28 seconds long because you're going to lose their attention. Well, unless, of course, that minute and 28 second soundbite was coming from Steve Kerr. You know, he's sort of a different cat. And when that guy talks, there's reason to listen. He had an awful lot to talk about after a really weird weekend of Warrior basketball at Oracle. We all know what happened on Saturday. Steph didn't play. Livingston didn't play. And Bogut rested as well. The Warriors came out. They were bad early. They were bad in the middle. And they were even worse late. They were just as bad and disjointed. And it went to speak more to then, well, just Curry's not playing tonight. They were unaffected, seemingly, by the NBA game on their own schedule. The Dallas Mavericks came in here and punked them. Dirk Nowitzki had a game for the year. Luka Doncic is the man. Like, that guy is unbelievable. And if you give him some space, he will take it. It was a weird weekend of basketball, Matt. Really, really weird weekend of basketball. Then the Pistons come into town. Pistons are going to get, you'd think, a better effort. The Warriors are going to be woken up by the fact they played so poorly the night before. Curry's now back. Everything should start flowing. And indeed, you saw Curry knock down that shot early. It got the Warriors up, looking, feeling, behaving like themselves again. So there's Steve Kerr. After a very interesting 48 hours, you know, someone asked him, well, what can you tell us about the difference between Sunday to Saturday? And instead of getting into the real differences between the two games, Steve sort of hung it all on one point. And this is just phenomenal. And I listened to this. Matt said, you got to hear this when I walked in today. And I thought it was a great soundbite. And it made me think that we only pay attention to the engine of the train of success. We never wait around for the caboose to go by and think about all the other little things that a great run of success does. Well, a great run of success takes a game like you saw Saturday, such a flop like that, and make you think you have an allergic reaction to it. You're like, oh my God, what's wrong? I never want to see that again. I thought these guys were great. What's the deal? The truth is, taking 5 nights off a year is built into every single schedule any NBA team has ever been handed. Usually more than that. just having a bad night where, hey, you're a shooting team, you shoot a lot. Guess what? You didn't shoot well and you got run. What happened to the Warriors, although it is rare to happen to them, it is common to happen in the NBA. And leave it to Steve Kerr to put everything into perspective. Listen to this. And then, Kolsky, when we come on back, your reaction. Here we go.
I drove home last night, and as disappointed as I was and as surprised as I was, I realized, you know, over 5 years, you know, it's more surprising than that game last night is not having any of those games for 3 years. Like the first 3 years of this run, I don't think we had a single game like that. And you think about what these guys are doing night after night after night, taking everybody's best shot, playing deep into June. It's actually surprising that there haven't been more of those nights over the years. And what you've seen the last couple of years, the last two seasons, is we've had some letdowns. We've had nights like that. It's hard for anybody to understand what these guys go through physically, emotionally, spiritually, trying to defend the crown, trying to win the title, trying to stay on top of the mountain. It's hard. And last night they had nothing. They had nothing in the tank. And the great thing about this team, as I mentioned, is they always bounce back because they have so much pride. But what they've accomplished, you know, this team has the best record over the last four seasons of any four-year period in the history of the NBA. So what they've done is just remarkable. So last night was tough, but it's really tough to do what they've done too. So we're gonna give them a pass and we're gonna move on. And we played a good game tonight and we roll on. So I prefer to look back at how few games there have been like last night's over the last 5 years rather than the opposite. All right, thanks everybody.
All right, so first of all, you said it. 90 seconds of that coherent, thoughtful, not repetitive and confused sounding, very little umming and aying, just knocking it out of the park. How few people in the world can pull that off, never mind NBA basketball coaches. Steve Kerr, the same way he handled the aftermath of the I'm so sick of Draymond stuff thing, the same way he handles everything, nobody strikes a better, more professional, more thoughtful tone at a press conference than Steve Kerr, period. End of story.
Right. How do you stick the landing every time?
Every time. Number two, one of the things that jumps out to me about that is they had nothing in the tank. It's different from we weren't focused, we didn't care, right? And people like to say they don't care tonight. And I think there's a tendency for people to hear care and think some nights they walk into the arena of the Warriors and just say, you know what, who cares about this one? I don't really feel like playing tonight. And that's not the case. The case is NBA teams over the course of the year, it's normal a few times, as you said, probably five times minimum for any given team, to just show up and have nothing in the tank for whatever reason. It could be any number of things, any combination of things from different guys. It could be something in the locker room. It could be something off the court. Who knows?
His tire. He's tired. He's a little bored. He didn't watch enough film.
He twisted his ankle on Friday.
Exactly. His kid was crying with a whooping cough all night, kept him and his wife up. They're exhausted. This guy had a funny crab sandwich and a bad oyster, and his tummy's not feeling well, and it just goes down the line. Yeah,
Jacob Evans checked into a game the other day, and we got the detail from the broadcast. Oh, I can't believe he's playing tonight. He's been walking around with a mask because he's been so sick, and he's trying not to get his teammates sick. Like, stuff happens. These are human beings with lives. You're going to have off nights, and I think what we lose as fans or media members covering the Warriors who watch this team night after night, what we lose is when the Warriors have one of those nights, it stands out like a sore thumb because of how high they've set the bar, because of how high our expectations are. When the Charlotte Hornets have a night where they show up and have nothing in the tank, we just call that another Hornets game because they lost by 30 instead of 11. It doesn't really stand out the way this does. And I think we forget sometimes that these are human beings who just are, no one's at their best all the time. I'm certainly not. Nobody is. That's not how life works.
Gianna.
Except Gianna. And then the third part to me is very simply, because we already got the text, tell that to the guy who spent $800 to take his family to that game. And I get that, man, because that stinks. It's expensive. And we talked about the guy who bought courtside seats for Giannis and LeBron and neither of them played, right? It stinks, and I'm not in favor of that, and I feel terrible for that guy and for the diehard Warriors fan who gets to go to one game a year and saw Saturday. I get it. and we can talk about, I paid my money, they're professionals, they should show up every night. And that's fine to say, but it's just not very realistic. And at the end of the day, human beings are flawed creatures, and they're just not going to show up every night at the same peak level of efficiency. It's not happening.
Well, and Draymond Green spoke to that, and this is probably going to rub a certain percentage of you the right way or the wrong way, but it shouldn't, because what he's saying here is just the truth of human nature. Here's what Draymond Green had to say about just being locked in, dialed into a job that you love. Like, you know, come on, guys, you're playing a child's game professionally. How do you not love it all the time?
It's more so about the people that you come to work with every day. That's what makes runs like this possible. That's what makes runs like this sustainable. You know, I think when you look at the game of basketball, I love the game of basketball. It's a job. And in saying that, you can love your job all you want. There's going to be some days that you just don't want to do it. But when you come in with a special group of people, you know, like we do every day, from, like I said, the ownership group to the players to the PR staff, the community relations staff, everybody's a tight-knit family. And that's what makes runs like this possible.
I appreciate the honesty. Like I said, you know, you just heard him say, sometimes someone comes in here, you really need your team to pull you through what could be enough to take you off your game. To get back to the very, you know, look, I'm not arguing with the guy who sent the text here saying that, tell that to the guy who, you know, spent $800 to take his family to the game. Well, Steve Kerr acknowledges that. Steve Kerr absolutely cares about the investment and is, I think, upset that he couldn't deliver a better brand of basketball to you that night. But what he was trying to say through his ultra eloquent, well thought, based in logic, impossible to argue with 90-second soundbite is, okay, so if tonight you didn't get your $800 worth, but you're here every single night for $800 for the last 3 years, dropping $800 over a 41-game schedule, you got $98,400 worth of bang for your buck. Sorry about the $1,800 yakker we gave you on Saturday. That's what Steve was trying to say. It does stink that that one moment in a vacuum was that bad. When you take a step back and you look at 3 years, you can't help but have a standing ovation for this team. And, you know, Steve points out a little thing like, all we've done is win the most of any professional basketball team in the history of professional basketball over 4 years. But tonight was bad? Okay, we're sorry about that, but hopefully we've earned a little house credit to this point.
Yeah, and someone texted, I don't recall the Bulls getting run out of the house when they were running through titles. And as someone who lived in Chicago and split season tickets, they absolutely did.
Yeah, the Bulls, just like the Golden State. So in the Bulls three-peated twice.
Yes.
The Warriors are trying to three-peat once. In both of the three-peat years for the Chicago Bulls, they were much worse in the regular season than they were in the two regular season walk-up years to the three-peat. Noticeably worse, like 100 winning percentage points worth. You went from playing 780 ball down to 670 ball, you know? I mean,
each year of the three-peat was successively tougher. And this is what happens. And look, there's just going to be these games. And again, we can talk about professionalism. And that's why this conversation makes me a little uncomfortable, because even when I've used words like care or effort, I've never seen these guys as unprofessional. I've never really imagined showing up with an attitude of who cares about tonight.
I've never seen anyone walk in with a serious weight problem because they weren't paying attention in the offseason and they're just a big stinking fat body. That's unprofessional.
Chris Paul shows up every year out of shape. None of the Warriors do that.
Right.
And so it's not, I would say they're on the better end of how many nights a year an average team has just a dog of a night. It's just, it's so noticeable when it happens to them because of the standard they've set.
From the Chilton Auto Body text line, Matt, got a guy here says, I work 5 days a week for a fraction of the pay. I'm also tired, exhausted, and deflated, but I still show up. Cry baby millionaires. Look, you do have a legitimate point. If I were standing over your shoulder evaluating your job every single day, I guarantee you, you ain't half as good as you think you are at it to begin with. If you stood in the spotlight of scrutiny with your job, look, don't think for a second that the worst guy, wherever it is you work, is as you know, like, is the Jacob Evans of what you do. Jacob Evans is so much better at basketball than the worst guy filling out the TPS report, wherever it is you work, is at what they do. I understand that it's really easy to shake your fist and say, try harder at the sport, professional athlete. And there are nights where you're almost within your right to do that. But when Steve sort of woes it all back, and then they come out and they perform great the next night, you got to still feel really good about this organization. And for people who are wanting to interpret one bad game against the Dallas Mavericks as a real sign that this playoff run isn't going to go as smoothly, again, people pick and choose what they want to pay attention to. And the amount of people who want to pay attention to the Dallas Mavericks loss more than the last 4 years of postseason evidence that we've been given are just, it's a fool's errand. You're just impossible to make happy. You know, excuse. You know, what's wrong with that? Expecting professionals to act professionally. Look, it's a sport. You don't have to be unprofessional to get your ass kicked.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
You can be trying really hard and be beaten soundly. That's what happens, especially when the other team is full of millionaires who are geared up to go too.
And it's one of the biggest games of the year for the other millionaires every night.
Right.
The Warriors are on the top of the mountain looking down. Every other team is looking up at them saying, maybe we don't need our best in Sacramento, but when we get to Golden State, we got to bring it or we're going to get run out of the building.
The only thing the Warriors that can measure themselves against is a four-game performance in the NBA Finals. Nothing counts as good job until they complete that. Where the Dallas Mavericks are still probably celebrating that win as a sign of things to come and wait until Porzingis is here and healthy. And oh boy, I can really see the magic and all this. Now, it was a game of the year for them. It was just one of two games this weekend for the Warriors.
That's right. Yeah, one of two teams starting with a D that you played on one particular weekend. Just another game.
By the way, Aisha did have a party on Friday night.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which maybe had a little 30th. Bit to do with it.
No. I heard Steph say it. He was totally caught off guard when they approached him to take Saturday night off. He had no idea that was coming. Did not expect it. Definitely that was all about sports science.
Mm-hmm.
It must sure. be. Must be science.
I know sports science, and that's sports science.
It was a really good win for the Warriors when you couple it with the bad loss that they took the night before. But it was a curious win for the Warriors just based on the way Kevin Durant went about helping the Warriors find their way into the win column. It was almost as if Kevin Durant decided to put his own shot on double secret probation. And Durant wasn't even playing the Detroit Pistons. I think in his own mind, he was still playing the Dallas Mavericks, and he was terrible against the Mavericks from a shooting standpoint. He couldn't buy a three-point shot. He was 0-for-8. He was 9-for-25 from the field against Dallas. Now, of all players, that's enough to rub anybody the wrong way. Durant, that's probably enough to keep him up all night.
And in particular, I think over the course of his Warriors career, we've seen him, when he can, choose to wait to sort of settle into games,
yes.
And a lot of his shots come later. You look at that Mavericks game, and it was clear with Steph out, he felt from the very beginning, I got to do the heavy lifting. He took 12 shots in the first quarter.
And that's something you normally do not see him
no.
do. And it's something he doesn't necessarily want to do. And you could say, well, that's a harbinger that he should stay right here, and I might even agree with you. But here's the deal. He hasn't been shooting it particularly well during a handful of games here, particularly from three, he's been off. So, like, I just think he decided less from me tonight is actually going to be a rare instance of it's going to be a little bit more. Less is more, and I am going to involve everyone I can and make plays and play defense. I know what Kevin Durant doesn't look like. I know what Kevin Durant does look like when he's kind of mailing it in. With all due respect, he does this rarely. But I have seen him jog. I have seen him kind of wear beige and blend, hide out in a corner or right by that above the break point in the three-point line. and he's just not really moving. He's not cruising around. He's not setting screens or coming off screens. There's just there's not a lot happening. None of that was happening in the Detroit game. Like 11 assists, 2 turnovers. The energy was right. He was moving. He was engaged defensively on every possession. He wasn't unengaged offensively. He just wasn't looking for the shot. He was looking to make the right pass or the better choice. And honestly, I thought maybe, just maybe, this could be a sign of somebody's making a little bit of a protest, or is this anything to do with Curry? Or no. Everything's cool. Everything is fine. Everything's fine. Durant chose to do this for all the right reasons, none of the wrong reasons. This wasn't I'm on a protest. I'm going to be stingy with something you need more of, or anything like that. It was him figuring out a way to get back into playing his efficient manner of basketball. And what did he go, 5 for 6?
Exactly. And I thought of two things while you were saying that. One is, we also know what it looks like, not necessarily from Durant, but when a guy turns down shots that he ought to take, because we see it from Iguodala all the time.
Or Draymond
sometimes, although lately he's been better. And you're going, what's happened? Why just look at the hoop, for God's sakes? That's not what I saw yesterday. I saw Kevin Durant when he had open shots 6 times. He took them and he made 5 of them. That's pretty good. I saw a guy who has been maniacally focused on efficiency since he became a Warrior, come off of one of his least efficient games of the year and say, tonight I'm focused on being efficient. And all he did was lead the team in assists, 11 assists, just 2 turnovers, and he played a heck of a defensive game, and just overall, I thought, helped the flow. And the second thing is, I swear it was just a week ago that you and I sat here talking about, hey, they really moved the ball through DeMarcus Cousins. And when it went into the post to Cousins, it came back out and it got good shots for guys. And
right, no black hole.
Exactly.
Black hole.
And boy, we hope they can keep playing like that when Kevin Durant comes back. And here Kevin Durant comes back and they're playing exactly like that. And still some people want to complain he's not shooting enough. And to me, it's just like, that's when I say, okay, now I get why he's annoyed, because he really can't win.
You're right in many regards. Now, another good sign from Kevin Durant. And again, there are little things that I see and I go, oh boy, is this cause for concern? So last night he comes out for the media in the White Sox hat. That's usually not a good sign. White Sox hat means Kevin Durant is here to battle media. He's in battle mode. Kevin Durant's in not happy mode when you see the White Sox hat.
As a White Sox fan, I challenge that. Kevin, I know you're listening. Please just call and confirm that you, like me, are just a fan of the Southsiders.
I don't think so. That's his I'm here to cause a ruckus look.
Go
so,
Sox.
Durant gets into it for a moment with Marcus Thompson, and then what do you know? Instead of leaning over, choosing between the red and blue wire, one makes the bomb stop, the other makes it blow up in your face, he decided to disarm the bomb. Kevin Durant having fun. Listen to this. Great little back and forth with Marcus Thompson.
KD, you're one of the greatest scorers of all time. It just looks weird to see you take 6 shots. What are you thinking while you're out there? Was it just how they were playing you or your passing game was going?
I mean, I'm a well-rounded player, and I can still affect the game without taking a bunch of shots. You know, I thought I passed the ball well. I thought I played a great floor game. And I know you used to put me in the box as a player, but, you know, I've grown. Yeah, like Marcus, like you, individually. Like Marcus Thompson used to put me in the box, you know, so I had to let you know I'm just kind of well-versed, you know what I'm saying? Well-rounded as a human, you know what I mean? Oh, you did right about that. I appreciate that. My bad. I was talking to
the guy next to you, he actually said. But wry smile on Durant, like he could tell. I walked you right up to awkward, then I pulled you back from it. Everyone has a little chuckle. You could almost hear the nervous laughter going through that. Oh, thank God we're not going through this again. It was a great night from Kevin Durant. And there's another thing or two that we haven't even touched on here that is certainly going to come up, especially when we get into our next guest. We got Dieter Kurtenbaugh right around the corner. We're going to be talking, of course, a little opening day with him. but we'll get a little reaction from a weekend over at Oracle. Dieter brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises, and he's right around the corner here on 95.7 The Game. But Durant, happy even in a White Sox hat. It's a miracle.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
It's really good to have you along today. Thanks so much for stopping on by. Matt Kolsky's hanging out this afternoon back here on the Damon Bruce Show. And I got to begin this segment before we get to Dieter, who is waiting patiently for us, with a big hearty thank you to my good friend Ike of Ike Sandwiches, who has been conspiring with Gianna to bring us lunch, I guess, all day long, because he just walked in with two huge boxes of sandwiches.
He hooked it up.
For my birthday. Very, very nice. Thank you very much, Ike. You are the man. Feeding the station.
That's very cool. Very cool.
A lot of love. Kolsky, you eating it?
Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Good. Everybody eat. Everybody get a sandwich.
I've got my two set aside.
I'm already mid-sandwich. Is that not we're not supposed to eat during the show? My bad. My bad, guys.
Did you see the pyramid of sandwiches that I stacked for myself to bring home?
Good. Later?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the food pyramid.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's not the nutrition pyramid. It's the delicious pyramid. Ike, thank you very much, man. You are the man. Always have been. Always will be. Dieter Kurtenbaugh, sports columnist for the Bay Area News Group. It is opening day in Major League Baseball in about 72 hours. We're going to see that come on down the pipe. But right now, Dieter, you were probably at Oracle Arena over this weekend. And, you know, I know that there was an awful lot of watching NCAA tournament games, and the Warriors were really enjoying themselves on Sunday. Saturday was a totally different story, and it really, what a difference a day makes over at Oracle Arena.
It's interesting how pride kicks in for these guys every now and again, isn't it?
It is.
You get your butt kicked like that, and then you have no choice but to come out and sort of look like the Warriors won.
Wait, am I on speakerphone?
Ah, sorry, Dave.
No, how dare you, sir? I mean, you
this is my bad. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, no, I can hear you okay, for sure. But if you could pick up the phone, it'd be even better.
All right. You can call me back in like 20 seconds.
All right. Call him back in 20 seconds. Who the hell does this guy think he is? Putting the show on speakerphone. No, hey, sometimes you think it's going to be the right thing to do. It's never the right thing to do.
Getting yourself to sound good on the radio is a constant battle when you're on a phone line.
It really is.
Especially for head coach Steve Kerr.
Especially for Golden State Warrior head coach Steve Kerr. We're working on that diligently, night and day. But really, it was a tale of two cities, if you will, over at Oracle. A terrible game on Saturday. Sunday, getting right in all the right ways. And even though Durant played a reduced role in the scoring column, he wasn't reduced in his impact in the game at all. He was really wired in. He played great. Anyone who's trying to sell you something's wrong with Kevin Durant today wasn't paying attention to what I think he was trying to accomplish. And that was just get himself back to center, which he did by focusing on an all-round game, not just a scoring output. Dieter is back with us. First of all, let's check and see how he sounds now. Dieter?
Yeah, is the studio working any better this time?
This much is better. So much better. Thank you very, very much. I really do appreciate it. You sound like you must have a lovely singing voice right now.
Oh, so, it's the best.
Yeah. So the Warriors, terrible on Saturday, very good on Sunday. Steve Kerr with a perspective that, you know, the fact that this hasn't really happened to us once in the last 4 or 5 years is kind of awesome. And I know no one wants to hear that tonight, but you should think about it a little this weekend, because it's maybe the best point made in Bay Area sports. The Warriors have been on a run that has spoiled us so rotten, we don't even know how good it is around here.
That's exactly the right term, spoiled. You come to the game, and I got the same kind of clap back that a lot of people, I'm sure, around the Bay in sports media got, where it's, oh, I work all week and I came and I spent all this money on this. And I get it. I can sympathize. That sucks. But you knew Stephen Curry wasn't going to play for more than 24 hours, so you had time to offload those tickets. You know the state that this team is in, what they've done over the last few years. And you also know the risk of going to a professional sporting event, any sporting event, is that you're not guaranteed a victory. This isn't like Rotten Tomatoes where you can go look up and see if the movie's any good beforehand. You got to roll the dice every now and again. And the Warriors have given you a lot of winning roles over the last 4 or 5 years. You're going to get some duds. It stinks that this team is at a state where if they're out of it early, they're just going to kind of pack it in. But you can understand why when you take it into the whole context. I get it for the fans, though. It stinks, but this is where we're at. And ultimately, they're probably not going to turn in any duds like this come the postseason. And those are the games that really matter. You're the one buying a first game of a back-to-back. You got to know the risk going in.
And I think that's the key point here is every time we try to talk about one of these tough losses, we end up back at how can you envision this happening when we actually get to the postseason and everything matters that much more. I don't think there's really anybody who believes the problems we see in a game like Saturday will be there come postseason. It just doesn't make sense.
No. I mean, and if they do show up, then we have something to really talk about. Right. Now it's intriguing. And now, you know, you might be happy you had the ticket there. You might have seen the end of a dynasty. But for a regular season game against Dallas in March, I mean, you can understand how malaise can kick in. And it certainly did. And when you don't have Stephen Curry, it's only going to be exacerbated to another level. It really is incredible. I mean, to think 6-7 years ago that Warriors fans would be complaining that their team got blown out by 30. That was every single game at Oracle Arena for decades. And now it happens one time in the course of like 3 years, or I guess two times now, and people are losing their minds over it. That is being spoiled rotten.
It really is. We start hyperventilating after what used to be called Tuesday around these parts. It's amazing. Dieter Kurtenbaugh, columnist again for the Bay Area News Group. Thursday, the Giants will open up their season at the Padres, taking on Manny Machado and the rebuilt, retooled, revamped San Diego Padres, if you will. As I look at the retooling, revamping of the San Francisco Giants, you can't help but think that Zaidi right now is looking at the 11th hour waiver wire, looking for a name, looking for an at-bat, and that's typical. GMs are usually looking to round out their 25-man roster right at this point in time before the season begins. I actually think the Giants are in a rough position because they're using this time to look for a cleanup hitter, for goodness sakes. Like, they're not looking for the last guy in the roster. They're looking for the savior, and I don't think that guy's out there.
Apparently, they're only looking for catchers, too. I think like 14 different catchers have come through the roster over the last 48 hours. It is if Farhan is looking for something to make this team worthwhile for 162 games this year, he's wasting his time. He should start laying the groundwork for trading Madison Bumgarner so that they can rebuild the farm system in one fell swoop with one trade come June or July, because I have a very hard time seeing a team, even with pitching that could honestly be pretty damn good. I like the bullpen. I think the starting rotation has a chance to be one of the better rotations in the National League, but you have absolutely no offense. And I know that it's spring and hope springs eternal, but I am just rolling my eyes left and right at all of the optimism. I heard yesterday, Brandon Belt's going to hit 40 home runs this year. I thought I was living in a simulation where, you know, AT&T Park or Oracle Park or whatever the hell it's called now doesn't have a wind coming off the right field line and Brandon Belt doesn't get injured every year. I mean, it's going to be depressing, though. I will say this, at least it's interesting now because they're building towards something. What that is, we don't know yet, but there seems to be some sort of a vision, whereas in the last 2 years, they were just living in denial. And there was no goal except for hopefully this works out. And then it very clearly was not working out. And then they tried to sort of gaslight us into thinking that it's going to be A-okay. Now there's a process, a theoretical process you can buy into. And, you know, we can spend more time talking about it. All the stuff that we were doing over the last 2 years, we can do it in earnest. And we can actually feel like it's going to bring something positive in the future. So I don't necessarily think it will be the least interesting season, but I do think it will probably be a continuation on the field of what we've seen the last 2 years, and we all know that's not very good.
Aren't you kind of counting on the Madison Bumgarner trade when you say all that? Because I'm with you. There's at least, knowing what we know about Farhan Zaidi's past and how he likes to build a team, seeing what we see on the major league roster and throughout the minor leagues, a theoretical path presents itself. But until they actually move one of their veterans who could actually get them something back in return, or until something happens, isn't that just a theoretical plan? We haven't seen any real evidence yet, have we?
No, that's fair, but at least it's a theoretical plan as opposed to theoretical success with whatever the heck this team was the last 2 years where, you know, somehow it's just going to magically get fixed. I do agree with you, though. I mean, and I think that once the season starts and we kind of remove ourselves from this delusion that the Giants could actually be something worthwhile this season. We'll actually get into more of the nitty-gritty on what a Madison Bumgarner trade would actually mean, or what moving a Brandon Belt or a Brandon Crawford could actually do for this team. But right now we live in this sort of fairy tale land where this team is both totally rebuilding and still somehow relevant in the overall baseball conversation at the same time. I'm interested to see ultimately what comes, because you're right, it does seem like it hinges maybe a little bit too much on Madison Bumgarner. I don't know what kind of a market he will get. We'd like to think that it'd be a big one and that Madison Bumgarner isn't traded away in vain, but he's got to go. I mean, not that he's not a great guy and not that he's not a great player that you want on your baseball team, but you can't in good conscience re-sign this guy to the kind of deal that he deserves and still have a bright future, knowing how you have to build a baseball team in the year 2019 and beyond. So you never prolong the inevitable. It's one of the life lessons I like to live by. And the inevitable is that Madison Bumgarner needs to go somewhere. So you got to figure out a way to maximize it and time it just right. I think that Farhan should have everyone's utmost faith. Say that three times fast.
And you know, the way I see it is, if Madison Bumgarner's final act for the San Francisco Giants and the fans is to be a reason that retooling your farm system was able to be sped up years, that's a last great final act for him to have for this franchise. It's probably more important to the grand scheme of things than him being a career Giant. And that's just the hard reality of Major League Baseball. Dieter Kurtenbaugh from the Bay Area News Group. We got Connor Joe, the Rule 5 guy, a Zidey guy through and through. And there's Pablo Sandoval, who's a Bruce Bochy guy through and through. And I've heard that this is our first symbolic, if not literal, tug of war for the soul of the Giants in terms of how a team is built. If that is true, let me help. The tug of war should be won by the brand new GM who's at the start of his career, not the Hall of Fame manager who's at the end of it, as much as I love Boch.
Yeah, it seems to me like the tug of war is really on just those who want to tell on themselves versus those who kind of understand what's going on here. Bochy isn't going to, you know, pound the table so that Pablo Sandoval can get another 300 empty at-bats in the Giants uniform. It's just not a viable way for him to go out. It's undignified. And I don't know much about Connor Joe. I won't lie. I didn't, you know, dive deep into the scouting report and make a bunch of calls when the Giants went and got him. It seemed like just another on the fringes move for Farhan. But if he's the guy who knocks out Pablo gave it one hell of a run. And the Giants certainly avoided a bullet there by not signing him to the massive contract that the Red Sox got him. And we still saw many more at-bats with Pablo Sandoval in a Giants uniform. It was a career well-lived for Pablo Sandoval in San Francisco. And hopefully Connor Joe can do one of the hundreds of cool things that Pablo Sandoval did for Giants fans. Just one thing.
I want to quickly circle back to a couple things you mentioned early in our Giants discussion, which is, A, they've been through 10 or 15 catchers in the last week, and B, it's hard to find things that will make this year's games exciting. And when I hear those two things side by side, I say, hey, you know, they do have a catcher who's supposed to be the next great thing in the organization, and I've been told sitting behind a good catcher can be good for a catcher's learning experience, so why not just have Joey Bart up here?
Because that's way too aggressive. I mean, I understand that Bart is a college player and that he has some experience and that he does have a faster timeline than some guy you draft at 17, 18 years old. But you don't want to stunt this kid's development in any way, shape, or form, especially if it's just a PR move and just having some sort of excitement in the ballpark. Joey Bart's not going to save this team in any way. He's only going to make sure that the season ticket base doesn't diminish by another 1,000 people this year. And so what you want to do is you want to have him down in San Jose for a while. They have built an entire coaching staff in San Jose to make sure that Joey Bart is tutored the exact right way, the same way that they did it with Buster Posey. And then you move him up. And it might be fast, but he has to earn his promotion. If you're just trying to stick him out there and say, hey, the future is now, and he goes out and hits 169 and has to get sent down anyway, you have a big problem there. We've seen a lot of players in baseball history get called up too soon before they were ready, and then they never really make it back, and they never fulfill their full potential. This is a kid who's going to be a cornerstone behind the plate and at the plate for a decade to come. Take your time. The good things sometimes requires some patience. I don't think we're going to have to wait too long for Joey Bart, but I don't think we should see him this year at all. There's just no reason to expose him to major league pitching right now.
Dieter, awesome stuff, man. Really appreciate it, especially when you take us off speakerphone and treat us like adults. Thank you. No, good stuff,
all right,
man.
Guys. Happy birthday, Damon.
Oh, appreciate that. Thank you very much. Dieter Kurtenbaugh, Bay Area News Group here on 95.7 The
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.